This is an ABC podcast.
You're listening to A Big Country. I'm Clint Jasper. Thanks for joining me. This week, we're chatting with a helicopter pilot who's working in the outback. Her day job includes mustering stock from above, performing tricky aerial manoeuvres, and getting a bird's eye view over vast sheep and cattle stations. We'll hear the story of a bush adventurer who rescued a remarkable river red gum tree stump, sailed it down the River Murray, and turned it into a regional tourist attraction. And we'll meet the Queensland couple who are embarking on one last business venture before retirement. They're growing a little-known fruit called yuzu, and it's in hot demand for its powerful zest.
It's a Japanese citrus. It's been part of Japanese culture for as long as they can remember. A little bit like a lemon. Cut one and put it in your bath, and you'll have a wonderful aromatic experience. It's all about the zest, full of citrus oils. It just relaxes you, but chefs are dying for it. They love it.
We'll learn more about the trials and tribulations of growing yuzu. That story is coming up. First today, soccer is a universally loved sport. For seasonal workers from Timor-Leste, employed on berry farms in Tasmania, it's more than just a game. This summer, they've been playing for bragging rights against rival farms in a friendly soccer competition. It's also helping them find their feet in a foreign country. Larissa Smith has the story.
It's a real party vibe at this soccer pitch in the middle of Launceston. This is no ordinary game, though. The players are all from Timor-Leste, and they pick fruit for opposing berry farms.
We're all friendly, but we all, you know, even at a growing level, we want to grow the most berries per hectare or yield or have the fastest pickers. So there's that rivalry, and now it's stemmed out to a soccer rivalry.
Simon Dornorf is the farm manager at Hillwood Berries. He was approached by his pickers to set up some friendly games against other berry farms in the area. So teams were selected, training began, and uniforms were ordered.
Can't take credit for that. That was the guy's idea. They said, oh, we want a Mountford Berries shirt. We want to be part of the Mountford Berries team.
Gemma McKinnon manages the seasonal worker program at Mountford Berries.
My father-in-law said, oh, if we were in England, we'd be very rich, wouldn't we? We've got a soccer team after us. It's something that they talk about. And now that we've played a few games against some of the other farms, it's, oh, we won against this farm and we've lost against this farm, so we've got to play them again to try and beat them. And it's a talk around the farm while they're there.
For the fruit pickers who have grown up playing soccer back home, these friendly games have helped them feel like they belong here.
I'm Antonio Pinto. My call name is Atoy. I've been working for Hillwood Berries in Tasmania for 7 years, since 2017 until now. Soccer is one of the most popular sport in Timor. Last year, we did a soccer with the local people. I can say it's like we socialize with the people in our, around us, like community, yeah. Part of the community, so that's one of the positive things that we gained during our stay in Australia.
My full name is Suarez Fatima Oliveira. I'm working in Mountford Berries. It's not a big team.
Not too bad, and you've got a goal.
Yeah. The first goal, we are so happy with that, yeah.
Who was it?
His name is Esau. Thank you.
He's a gun player.
Yeah.
He's good, yeah.
Yeah, he's good one. On this win, yeah.
What would you normally be doing at home?
I'm studying, but I have to leave my study because my father was dying. I have to leave everything, so I choose to come into work and to help my family.
I'll let you get back to the team. Good luck for the second half.
Yeah, thank you so much.
My name is Fernando Nunes da Costa Barreto. They call me Nunes. I'm playing for Hillwood Berries. I was amazing today. We hope we keep going doing this activity for the future, so that, you know, so that to make us like feel not only for work, but we also have fun, you know. Like we here during 6 months, or some people working for 1 year, you know, we just keep working, you know. If we just keep working, we don't doing like extra, you know, activity like that, make your life feel boring, you know. We need to create something for
for everyone to make them express themselves, you know, to other things. So that, you know, not only work for money, but we also need to make some fun for everyone.
This is the seasonal worker vibe. Like, you know, there's been footage previously of the Samoan boys singing in hotel quarantine all those years ago, but we see that regularly on the farm. They'll be singing in the field or a laugh, and then that reverberates across the tunnels with other guys laughing just out while they're working. So that real positive energy is what flows through the whole seasonal working community, and that was on display today with just the energy of doing something fun that's away from work. So these type of events, I think, as we grow into having, you know, longer term workers, we have a community of workers that they all know each other, you know, into farm relationships too, that mean we can have more things like this. It's not just a Hillwood community on itself. They've got their own friends in other farms and other parts of the state.
The pastoral care side of thing is more about their welfare while they're here, so taking them to doctor's appointments and making sure that they're looked after in terms of their finances and the food that they're eating and making sure that they're healthy and well. So these extra things is not necessarily prescribed that we have to, but we feel that it just brings that extra morale into the group. They enjoy their time here in Australia while they're here, and that's sort of our aim, is that we want them to be here, we want them to earn money, and we want them to really enjoy being here while they're working and earning money for their family.
The crowds have been amazing, and I can just see the smiles on the faces of the players that they just had a thoroughly great time.
Yeah, they did. I think there was a winner. I think Mountford won that one. We're sort of friends with the other farms, you know, the bosses at the other farms, so it'll be good bragging rights that our team has won this one, so that's good.
Viva Tiberlaste!
We had a little business in Vanuatu. We lived there for 12 years, moved back 3 years ago and thought, one last venture. Julie's in her 50s, I'm in my 60s, too early to retire.
Not ready to retire, Dave and Julie Moffat decided to embark on a new venture, growing a little-known fruit called yuzu in the Mary Valley region of southeast Queensland.
It's a Japanese citrus. It's been part of Japanese culture for as long as they can remember. A little bit like a lemon. Cut one and put it in your bath and you'll have a wonderful aromatic experience. It's all about the zest, full of citrus oils. It just relaxes you, but chefs are dying for it. They love it. It's only available here, apart from a fairly large grower in Victoria, not much in Queensland. So the chefs generally have to use an extract from Japan, which is nothing like fresh. It's hard to grow. It's spiky. It's full of seeds. It doesn't have much juice, but the zest will do magic.
Hello, I'm Jennifer Nichols, and I'm chatting to Dave and Julie, who've taken on quite the challenge growing this tricky and fickle fruit.
We've got 300 trees that went in 18 months ago, yes. Started putting them in, so they're only babies. But some have given no fruit this year, some are loaded, some have one branch with fruit and the rest of the tree has nothing.
A fickle fruit.
That's right.
And whereabouts are you based?
We're in Imbul, just out of the little town in the Mary Valley.
Did you have any horticultural experience before this?
Not me, but certainly Dave, yes.
Oh, I grew up in New Zealand. My father was a horticulturalist. I'm the youngest of six, and all my brothers have ventured into horticulture. I had a little pest control business when I was a bit younger, and there they were growing things, and I was killing things. So I wanted to even the score. And they've been very helpful too. They've came over and helped me with the initial planting. Because it's an unusual thing, you can't get the trees. You've got to find someone that'll do the grafting for you to get it started. So it's been quite an adventure. We're keeping away from chemicals, so only using organic sprays, trying to grow biodynamically. Have a couple of horses on the property, so I'm using lots of horse manure. And that's a challenge, but we really want a good natural product The grower in Victoria said to us, you'll probably have 50% seconds. And I can understand why, because they're easily damaged. They're very spiky, so they touch the spikes and that'll damage them. But even if that's the case, it doesn't matter too much because the distillers are quite keen. It makes a beautiful gin. So distillers don't care if there's seconds, they'll take the seconds and they will peel that steam off the citrus oils and make that as a good gin additive.
Julie, how would you describe what the fruit looks like?
Looks exactly like a mandarin, but bright yellow. It's quite a thick skin, and the pith is very bitter, the white part, so you need to avoid that. And it's, like Dave said before, full of seeds.
So you can use it just for the traditional citrus tarty flavours, but you can also get from the oils a beautiful, rich, almost apricot-y dessert flavour. You think about lemon curd. Well, you can make a yuzu curd that is really sweet and beautiful. Also, if you like limoncello, you can make a beautiful yuzu cello too.
Now, how did you two come across yuzu?
Our property's only 5 hectares, so we were trying to think of a, I guess, high value product we could grow in such a small area. And we were just throwing ideas around with friends, and someone said, what about yuzu? And we had never heard of it, and we investigated, and it seemed to come up as a thing.
That's just the best story. That's pretty amazing that you've managed to get fruit off them in that time frame too.
It is. I think if you were a smart grower, you would have pulled them all off to put all the energy into growing, but we wanted to have a little look. So from our 300 trees, we have about 150 kilos sitting out there. Hopefully we can get to April without any nasty storms and be able to harvest and see where we go. It's hard to put the cart before the horse. You can't really develop a market unless you've got a product, but you don't want to produce the product and not have a market. So slowly we try and get the two coming along at the same time.
How do you support yourselves when you haven't produced a crop yet?
Well, good question. We bought this property, had two tumble down houses, so we got busy and fixed them up, and one's now a nice little Airbnb. We call it Maggie's Cottage, completely isolated and private. I think we've still got 5-star reviews after 100 people, so we're off to a good start.
Well, it's wonderful that you've met up with all of the people at Slow Food Noosa then. How much of a difference has that made to your introductions, I suppose, to people?
Well, we're very new members, only about 6 months, I think, but the group feels very keen to help each other. So we are a bit ignorant about how the food chain works from a small producer to a restaurant or beyond. So we feel like we get the support we need from the Slow Food group to help with that.
And sometimes you're a bit embarrassed being so small. But then you find there's lots of real small ideas, one-man band, that have come up with an idea. So it's really been quite encouraging to join the slow food movement.
I think that's one of my favourite things, because it's like, who would have known that I'd be out this afternoon talking to some yuzu growers? I mean, I've never even heard of the fruit.
You get that right, yuzu.
Yuzu. Yeah. Yuzu. How do you spell it?
Y-U-Z-U. Once you've heard of it, you will see it. There's quite a few high-end soft drinks and tonics, and you will see yuzu gin.
Dave and Julie Moffat from Mary Valley Yuzu, they were speaking to reporter Jennifer Nichols. Before that, Larissa Smith went along to a soccer match being played between workers of rival berry farms in northern Tasmania. And you can see more on that story, including video of some of the action from the match. You'll find it on the ABC homepage at abc.net.au. Just search for A Big Country. I'm Clint Jasper, with you for A Big Country. Still to come, we'll hear the backstory of a centuries-old river redgum stump that's been attracting tourists to a rural South Australian town for decades. And we're meeting 25-year-old helicopter mustering pilot Tash Greenshields. Reporter Lily McCure caught up with Tash on her family station in far west New South Wales between her flying duties and mustering goats.
Tash Greenshields loves everything about living on the land. She grew up on a cropping farm before her family moved to a sheep, cattle and goat station in far west New South Wales.
I went straight into a station hand job, working for a property. I did that for 12 months and then went out on my own and contracting business. I was on a bike most days, really.
And is that something that you always wanted to do?
I sort of never really thought about doing anything else. I knew that uni wasn't for me. I half thought about doing a trade, but yeah, basically I finished school and then just started mustering and loved it and then just stuck with it.
What is it about mustering and being out on the land that you enjoy?
Definitely the lifestyle. I love being able to work my dogs and even work in stock. Sometimes it can be pretty frustrating, but it's pretty rewarding. I just love being on the land, so anything in regards to being on the land is, yeah, my passion really.
Tash is a contract musterer, livestock pregnancy scanner, work dog trainer, and her most recent accomplishment, helicopter mustering pilot, a long-term goal of hers. It was early on that Tash knew she wanted to be up in the air, working with stock in remote pockets of Australia.
As a kid, always dreamed of flying. When I was in school, always looking up on YouTube, like cattle mustering up north and stuff like that, loving watching those videos. My first ever experience with a helicopter was actually one of our old pilots took me out for a fly, and that was awesome, and I thought, this is for me.
But it was a passion that Tash didn't think she'd be able to achieve until quite recently. Self-doubt, some negative comments, and the cost of attaining a pilot's licence all combined to leave Tash feeling like it was an unattainable dream.
It's pretty expensive to get your licence and get everything, like, in regards to being able to fly. And also had, like obviously my family supported me and my sort of few people that I work for, but, yeah, definitely had a few people that suggested that it wasn't sort of my thing, and, yeah, I got a bit talked out of it for a while there.
Those people that sort of doubted you and didn't back that passion, what sort of things did they say?
I remember one comment was, oh, why would you get your licence? Because, like, you'll be having kids and, you know, you'll be having a family. Like, so there was, like, no point me flying. I thought it was a bit ridiculous that I wasn't able to do that, but I understand, like, where they were coming from. I don't know why I really took that. And you know, that made me change my mind. Just having that doubt of maybe I shouldn't be doing it, or I don't have a job for it. Like, if I get my license, what am I going to do? If I don't have a machine to fly in, yeah, you know, I've spent all this money for not much really. To wait for, you know, some people wait 2 years before they get a job, or some people are still waiting for jobs. So.
Just when Tash was giving up on her flying dreams, an opportunity arose after a conversation between Tash's parents and contract mustering pilot Louis Bunnell. It was this exchange that allowed Tash to turn that ambition into reality.
First time he mustered on our place, I was actually away. But, the second time I was home and I got there, he'd already landed, obviously, and got there and met him. I thought, this bloke is a bit of a character. And it got along real good. And then, another couple of times he come out. And then talking to my dad about how he's looking at, you know, wanting to get another pilot. And then dad sort of suggested, he's like, oh, well, have you asked Tash? And then, yeah, apparently Louis was like, oh, yeah, she'd be perfect. And then only, like, half an hour later, I got a phone call from him saying, like, look, mate, if you get your licence, like, we've got a job waiting for you. And so I was just so excited, but at that stage I'd pretty much given up on the idea that I was going to fly. So it was real conflicting because I was super excited for that opportunity, but then also the, like, reality of whether I would actually be able to do it or not was, yeah, kind of warring. Sat down and talked to mum and dad about it for a bit and, yeah, basically come up with the conclusion that I would have been pretty silly to turn down that opportunity. Yeah, went for it, and then basically 12 months later, here we are, really.
What is quite a male-dominated industry, Tash says that it's something she's certainly thought about.
It does make a bit of a difference. I mean, in this area, it's really good. But, yeah, it's certainly in the back of your mind, you're sort of thinking, oh, will I be taken seriously? But at the end of the day, you go there to do a job. If you do the job right, like, you know, the farmers are happy with that, whatever you are, really. Like, I mean, with my scanning and that, I've come across that a bit, but they don't really believe you. You know, they don't really take your word seriously, but that's just, yeah, I don't know, most people now are well and truly past that.
What about the safety aspect of it? Was that something your family were sort of talking to you about and worried at all?
Yeah, mum, she's a safety expert. She was always nervous when I was doing my theory. Like, we'd go through, like, one of the subjects, she's sort of looking at things that can go wrong, and I was getting, like, a bit excited about everything, so I'd, you know, ring them up and say, oh, this is what we've been learning. Mum's like, yeah, I don't really want to hear about that kind of thing. And But yeah, she's always the safety officer of the family. But yeah, Dad, he just loves it. He just knows that I'm not going to be an idiot in the machine, and so he's got full faith in me, and so does Mum, but I think that's a mother thing. She's got to worry.
Frank the Chookman Turton is an eccentric, larger-than-life character.
I think I've got to describe myself as being just a little bit different.
Loved right across Australia for his country music and comedy stylings.
As long as I can give people a laugh, a smile, and go away laughing and smiling.
Hey there, I'm Sophie Landau, and I'm chatting to Frank, who is a travelling entertainer and icon in his hometown of Paringa in South Australia's Riverland. He's a maker and collector of the weird and wonderful, including his handmade houseboat.
Oh, this is will it sink or won't it? It hasn't sunk yet.
Back on the land, Frank's got this one treasure in his collection of curiosities. It's a marvel of nature, an almost 6-ton river redgum tree stump.
It is the biggest of 11 known black stumps in Australia. And I've had no arguments with people about being bigger than theirs.
It's been a feature of his Riverland home for nearly 40 years, but how?
Yeah, that's a story in itself.
In 1984, Frank was on a bush adventure 50 kilometres upstream when he stumbled upon the magnificent root system of the fallen tree.
Across the river, and I saw this big stump leaning out of the riverbank, and I thought, look at that beautiful stump. That would be, and then I thought to myself, that would be beautiful if we could bring it in into the town, set it up and show it to people.
He attached a dozen 44-gallon drums and a motor and sailed it down the River Murray.
I think I spent about 6 days and nights sailing down the river, cold as all hell, about a mile an hour.
Frank saw something in that river red gum stump. He believes it could be more than 600 years old. He was awestruck by its beauty, a glimpse underground of how these giants live in nature. It's kind of like branches of a tree intertwining with one another, the intricate detail of the wood and its texture. You can see all of these unique markings, the lines on the wood like waves.
And you can see what goes on under the ground with the red gum tree, especially as big as that. No big long roots down in the ground, but a huge spread of them to hold hundreds of tons of weight up.
Frank says he's getting on in age and knows he won't be around forever. So it's time for the stump's next big move. The 81-year-old has donated it to the local community museum. It took a town-wide effort, with some help from local engineers, to achieve the feat, lifting the nearly 6-ton black stump down the road by crane.
It secures a future for the long term. We're not here forever, and probably Frank was just thinking about securing a site for the long-term future. Being a community museum, it belongs to the community.
That's Wayne Howell. He's the chair of the Renmark Paringa Community Museum. He's feeling pretty proud to be the new caretaker of this town's cherished attraction.
And I just think you could not write that story. I think it's just it's legendary, to be quite honest. And the story is nearly as important as the piece itself.
Intrigued tourists are stunned by this beauty of nature, like traveller Kim Buswell.
Oh my God, that is huge. And the story about the way you got it here, you have to come and, you know, sort of find out about it. And yeah, the story to get it here was amazing.
As for Frank, well, he knows the stump is in good hands, and he has plenty more zany pursuits to share with the world.
A hell of a lot of people have asked me why I built the boat, why did I take the stump, why have I got this gopher, why am I acting bloody stupid? what reason is it for? And I had many answers until I come to one answer, and what simply was, I said, I want to live before I die and give before I go.
Frank the Chookman Turton, ending that story from Sophie Landau. You can read more on the Black Stump and the Chookman story. You'll find it online at abc.net.au. Just look for A Big Country. That's the show for today. Thanks for listening, and I'll chat to you again next week.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.